Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome once more to Reckless Attack, a fifth edition Dungeons and Dragons actual play podcast. I am, as always, your GM Nathan here around the table with my very powerful, very excellent, very, very pretty players. I'll just say it. Looking good.
I am beautiful. Thank you.
Looking good, everyone.
Thank you.
Mostly because of the inner glow of your souls.
Not what's outside.
I mean, yeah, yeah. What's more important? And of course, I am saying all of this so that I may appropriately counterbalance the devastating session that we're about to have. But I think all of these lovely players should introduce themselves. And I'm trying to have perfect peripheral vision so I can at any moment exactly call on the person who is paying the least attention or taking a sip of water. But unfortunately, everyone has started paying attention to me.
So, dialed in.
On my right.
Hello, everyone. My name is Steve, and I am playing Sylvasterlin, the dragonborn monk, who is doing something.
Yep. He's off doing activities.
He's, wow, what a powerful start to that.
Yeah. I had that second where I'm like, wait, what was Sylv's plan? What was he doing? And then I was like, oh, yeah, right, we're going to do that. That was the plan. And then, all of that was like, my mouth just shut off.
Starting off strong today.
Yes, here
exactly,
we go.
Exactly.
And across from me is...
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I play Valeska Carter, the human Astric cleric of the Arcana Domain. And it's been a minute since we've recorded, and I'm just going to say, Val's at the desk of doing. That's what she's up to.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play Kaskrin Brightmane, the Dwarven Warlock. And you all forgetting what you were going to do has now made me forget what I was going to do. Like, I had a whole plan for, like, Kaskrin's day, like, his routine, and now it's all just gone. So he is sleeping in late today, y'all.
Dear listener, please stick with us. It's going to be fine. This isn't the important part of the episode, I promise. This is just our fun, quirky sides where we're very hashtag relatable.
And to my right.
Hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. And Checkers is, unfortunately, facing the consequences of his actions today.
Well, what do you mean? We don't know that yet. We don't know what's about to happen.
That's true. But for whatever reason, he is out and about in the city. You may have seen glimpses of him wearing a strange orange vest.
Yeah.
As you've been exploring. But other than that, he has vanished into thin air.
Carrying around a mystical bag of plastic.
Yeah.
And a pointy stick that he stabs with all alacrity. Pieces of trash. But that is right. We find all of our heroes at the moment off kind of settling in, doing their own things in the city. We, of course, know from last episode, Checkers is indeed doing some community service.
Yay.
For his crimes.
Now, I know some people tend to, you know, especially listening to episodes, don't like shopping episodes. But let me tell you, the community service episodes.
That's true.
Yeah, that's what brings the listeners.
A whole new level.
It's a new genre that we invented for actual play podcasts.
To our library episodes.
Yes. Exactly.
Plural. Library. Or what about our board meeting episodes?
Yes. Oh, yes. Reckless Attack. We bring you all the bureaucracy
that you want.
That you want in a podcast.
That you crave. And so we go to some of the other members of the Golden Tree Guild who are off kind of pursuing their own little personal projects that may or may not be state mandated in some cases. David.
Hi, hello.
To set the scene, it is maybe morning of a bustling day here in the Red City of Agmar. It is starting, I believe, to be about late summer, barely a cloud in the sky, and just a really nice kind of energetic feeling. Ooh. Day here in the city.
Okay.
Where do we find Kaskrin?
Yeah. So Kaskrin's in his room. And if I can continue to set the scene, I'm going to say that the Rixian cicadas are out in full bloom.
Yep.
Just like chirping away. in the background.
They come away. They come out every 90 years.
Yeah.
And it is deafening. But luckily, the Red City has a lot of like magical protections to keep the sound down.
And Kaskrin is at his desk. He has pulled out a sheaf of paper. He has dipped his quill in the ink. And he writes upon this piece of paper. At the desk of Kaskrin Brightmane. Explorations into the Eternal Citadel. Day 1. After many adventures outside the walls of the city, Kaskrin has realized that it's finally time to really delve into what the Eternal Citadel, his warlock patron, actually is.
Yeah, this whole...
the whole deal.
It
has been many decades since Kaskrin was first contacted by the Eternal Citadel. And he reached out, made a pact in a moment of desperation, as many warlocks are wont to do. And since then, he hasn't really given it a lot of thought.
It's been kind of a cool, just go about your business.
Yeah.
No one's bugging anyone. It's just, you know, pretty silent.
Right. It's just like, hey, we're cool. But recent activities, one, finding out that there may be other people serving the Eternal Citadel on Rixia, and earlier on being prompted to go into the woods by the Eternal Citadel, it is time to figure out what is happening here. The first time Kaskrin got a hold of the Eternal Citadel, he was in a different state of mind. He was panicked. He was, again, desperate. And while Kaskrin's not going to try and recreate that...
not actively seeking out just, like, adrenaline-pumping danger.
Yeah. His first thought is, okay, what if I relax? What if I take some deep breaths? What if I meditate?
Yeah, try to like listen. Maybe the voices are there, and you just haven't taken the time to stop, to center, to cast out your heart and your ears.
And so Kaskrin begins to try and slow his breath to center himself. But after a few minutes, he fidgets. Because, man, meditation, when you're not used to it, is hard, y'all.
Yep.
And he's sitting there fidgeting, tapping his hands on the desk. And he's like, all right, this isn't working.
Gives up immediately.
Yeah, right. After, just like, ah, oh, this sucks.
I've spent decades not being able to talk to this this Eternal Citadel. And an interminable 3.5 minutes. Got to move on.
I know exactly what will help your current situation. The ghost of Checkers pops into your head and is like, you should build a cardboard fort. Perhaps that will channel the Eternal Citadel.
Build your own citadel.
Yeah, right.
And Kaskrin finds himself doodling away on the report that he's written. And for some reason, his hand has just drawn a cardboard box. And it's like, how did that get here? But I mean, I'm not mad about it. But instead, striking that dumb idea from his brain...
No.
He's going to take the report, leave the room, walk down the hall, and knock on the door of another guilder, another good friend of his, Selv Astralin. Selv, are you in there? Do you have a few minutes?
Yes, of course. Come in.
Kaskrin lets himself in and starts by taking in the room. Like, he hasn't been in here very much, honestly, and I always imagined Sel's room as pretty Spartan. Like, you know, pretty empty. Maybe you have a corner dedicated to your practice.
Yeah, so it's it is relatively bare. There are a couple of items that are out that would probably be easily noted upon walking into the room. There's obviously the bed. There is a small rug on the floor that looks like Selv was sitting cross-legged on when you had knocked. And then in the corner of the room is a table with a chessboard, and it looks to be in the middle of a game. Selv kind of stands up and says,
I guess, what can I do for you?
Well, I'll just get straight to the point. I've been trying to do a little bit of meditation.
That's fantastic.
Is it? I don't know. It's kind of hard.
It does take some discipline, but I'm sure you're up for the challenge.
I don't know. I tried this. I don't know if I'm really suited for it, but do you think that you could help me? Give me a few pointers?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be delighted to. Please have a seat and get as comfortable as you can.
Kaskrin sits on the rug and tries to, like, sit himself in the way that he's seen Selv sit, like, cross-legged. Very quickly realizes that his legs are, like, too stiff and too rocky to, like, sit like this. And just kind of, like, sits however is, like, however he fits.
Try this.
And Selv will kind of come and basically push your shoulder down so that you're lying on your back on the rug.
Get in the most comfortable position you can.
It's like, wow, this is just like when I'm sleeping. This is pretty good.
Yes, it helps to be relaxed when trying to meditate. You are trying to hear the universe speak to you its truths. But no pressure. First, concentrate on your breath. Breathe in through the nose. Hold it for a few seconds. And out through the mouth. Sometimes a mantra will help.
Do you have any mantras that you like to use? Exactly, like starting to slow down his breath and like kind of follow your form.
I use the mantra of the monastery when I attempt to meditate. Throughout the night, throughout the day, no mortal, undead fiend or fae, or celestial with charming words to say, shall divert us from our sacred word to protect and to watch. May my oath be heard.
I'm not going to remember that, Self.
Do you?
Can I just like count numbers? Does that work? This whole meditation thing is really stressing me out.
I have seen members of the guard chant specific sayings as they are marching through the city. Is there anything like that that you have?
Oh, yeah, like marching songs? Yeah, we have plenty of those.
Try to slow the cadence down with your breath.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off the woods we go. This isn't
working. That's work. It, we can't have
any more. Copyright strike.
And Kaskrin kind of like chants this tune to himself. And you can see the way his breathing slows, relaxes. He puts his hands on his chest and starts to settle in.
Good. Let it go. Let it go.
All right, starting the episode from the top.
Yeah.
This time in ways that we won't be sued.
Yeah.
Good. You're getting it. Probably in half a year, 8 months, you should be actually feeling yourself relax and in a meditative state. You're doing very well.
Selv, do you mean I have to lay like this for an entire year?
Oh, no. You just maybe 30, 60 minutes in the morning, 30, 60 minutes in the evening, 30 minutes in the afternoon, maybe a little bit after dinner, possibly a little bit some before lunch.
If you were describing eating to me, I would be on board. This, Selv, I don't know if this is going to work for me.
Selv is at the point where he's like doing the micro nap equivalent of meditation, where he's always technically meditating. Mm-hmm.
That's my secret.
And Cass sits up and is like, I'll give it a try, Selv.
I can also try to knock you out. That was a joke.
Kaskrin gets up and is like, I think I'm... And like he starts to back away slowly. Good seeing you, Selv. Keep on keeping on.
I'm sorry I couldn't be of more assistance, Cass, but any other questions I'd be happy to answer.
No, I think you've done quite enough. And Kaskrin will excuse himself. And right afterwards, he kind of takes the report, puts it up against the wall, and scribbles out meditation. And next to it writes, absolutely not.
Sophie. What is Val up to on this? Again, this previously described really bright, pretty hot, but it's in a nice way. Mm-hmm. You know, you've already unpacked all of your summer clothes.
Yep.
Not worrying about all those scarves still in your, you know, like your storage unit, your fantasy storage unit.
My fantasy seasonal.
Yes, exactly.
Wardrobe.
And again, the cicadas are deafening.
And, yes. And again, luckily in the city, pretty good. It's a nice normal amount of deafening. What is Val up to at the moment?
Val is, like most mornings, walking through the city. She's got a cup of tea in her hand. She, stopped by Torres and Ports and is trying their new seasonal iced tea drink.
Iced Malzwort.
No. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. This is their breakfast drink. She is taking like a meandering route through the city because she has gotten up a little bit earlier than intended and could not fall back asleep, as she has a lot on her mind and a lot she wants to accomplish today. She is taking a meandering route through the city because the library does not open yet. So she's woken too early, and she knows she's tried. They will not let her in, even though she is like a black card library holder.
Yeah.
Like,
So to be clear, on this beautiful summer's day, going inside.
Yeah, she's just walking beforehand. Yep, you know, she's avoiding the heat of the day, fair getting enough. A nice stroll in, and has finished her iced tea as she's walking up the steps to the library. As the bell towers strike the top of the hour.
The poor, hapless, like, assistant junior librarian who's in charge of opening the doors on, I assume, God, what's too early for a library? 7 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
does a Yelp, but quickly realizes.
I feel like doesn't do a Yelp. Like, is
well established.
Is used to the site.
Yeah.
Got it. As someone who's worked at a cafe, you knew who was going to be standing there right at open. And it's like, come on in, please.
Thank you so much.
It is still early in the day, but the public library here in the Red City is already, there's already several librarians who are kind of shuffling around. You see the work of the unseen servants pushing unmanned book carts, you know, in between aisles. And seated at the desk already, kind of getting settled in for the day, is...
So, you actually don't see anyone at the desk this morning.
Is no one.
No.
You're in charge.
Yeah, but what I mean to say is, rather than seeing someone at the desk, you actually hear the shuffling of feet and the sound of a walking cane clicking down one of the aisles. And the voice of an old woman echoes through the nearby bookshelves.
I'm coming! I'm coming! Just wait! Hold your horses for just a second!
And you see this tiny little, like, 4 foot tall hunched woman pop out of the bookshelves.
Oh! Oh! Val! It's you!
I don't know why I still sound like Checkers.
It's Checkers in disguise.
Yeah.
Oh, as part of his community service.
Yeah. Oh, Val, it's you. Good to see you this morn.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
And this is Velma, the old librarian. And you would actually know her as one of the librarians who more or less is in charge of all the different unseen servants in the library. So someone has to control them, and this little old lady is it.
What can I do for you, dearie?
I am here to check in on Titanius. I know that it's the shift change for the last kind of conversation. I don't know, have we figured out a name for the shifts yet? Or is it just like talking with Titanius?
Oh, the book spirit. Yes, he's a lovely fellow. Sure has a lot on his mind.
Indeed he does. Spending untold years alone in a void will really expand and clear your head.
I feel like you almost could have just left it as like, can really .. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he'd appreciate the company. He's on back. Why don't you go say hi?
Thank you, I will. And Val will make her way through the complex series of walkways, loopbacks, and hop over a certain step to get to the restricted section.
As she approaches, she sees still, I would say, most of the warning signs that say turn back, lest ye be turned inside out by bookery. But they've already started to kind of like, they've removed a couple of them. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, as you kind of go through the grand archway that ushers guests in and go down the long hallway, you start to hear a very animated and uninterrupted voice that can only be delivered by someone who physically no longer has to breathe anymore in between their sentences. Well, and you know, and I read in this book, actually, this has been really helping me ever since I got out. It is the power of being, which I mean, you can imagine this is a pretty complicated topic for me right now and kind of being like locked away. And you, as you approach, you see a librarian who is looking exhausted, mentally and emotionally drained. It is early in the morning and yet still, oh my gosh, he is suffering. It is a tall elven librarian who you would recognize from your time, but he doesn't even notice you approach.
Val does not wait for a break in the conversation because she knows it will never come.
Mm-hmm.
So as she enters the room, Val just says, "Hey, Titanius. Hey, Roger. Sorry to interrupt. Roger, you are needed at the front desk. There's like a big influx of patrons for the library. Velma needs a little bit of help. So she's asked for you to come to the front, like right away. Needs you ASAP. Front desk.
It's 7.
Library's open and a lot of people are coming. You need to get out of here and go help her.
Yes. Yeah.
You need to go.
I need to go. Thank you, Val. I need to go. Titanius, it's always good.
Roger, she said quick.
Yep,
go,
and he's
go,
oh,
go,
he is moved. This is all like
I'm also just trying to get him to like
increasingly like louder volume as he's further down the hallway. I always really look forward, Titanius, to our bi-weekly meetings. Yep, it's always a highlight. Goodbye, talk to you there. And eventually you hear Roger's footsteps turn into a jog, into a run, as he flees the scene. And Titanius looks at you warmly and is like, "Val, how is it so good to see you? How are you this morning?"
"I am doing all right."
You know what's really great?
What?
Morning.
Yeah.
Different times of day. You don't realize you'd miss it until you spend a few decades where nothing changes.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Good morning, indeed. Indeed. Have you been able to see the morning? As I'm assuming this room is windowless and deep in the bottom.
It is, yes. It is the deepest. You've looked at the blueprints, and mm-hmm. technically there's not enough room for this place in the blueprints, but if it was, it'd be in the most middle sequestered portion, as mm-hmm. if it were a bunker.
Yeah.
And Titania's like, "Oh, the outside, no. Mm-hmm. No, I've been taking it slow, you know.
Good plan.
The mm-hmm. other librarians here have been very nice, very supportive, understanding, which also, by the way, that's neat.
You know, speaking of going outside, I was curious, Titanius, because this can be pretty overwhelming for you, have you thought about, like, trying to go back into the void to, like, have what was your normal clear your head? I don't want to.
I haven't. I could yeah. though. And you can see the vault doesn't have as many kind of protective wards as when you guys went in. Mm-hmm. It only actually has just kind of a little smattering of things. Seems to be pretty stable. And also no one's here guarding it or anything like that. It is just Titanius. And yeah, he gestures behind him and he's like, "Oh yeah, no, I mean, so I can actually go in whenever I want. I just have not taken the personal initiative and self power to do it yet."
That's fair. You know, take your time. Do it when you are ready. I don't know if it's possible, but if you need a friend to accompany you on that journey, I would be more than happy. I would be honored to take those steps with you.
That really means a lot because I can even make it so we don't have to be stuck in there.
That
and
would...
you offered that before you knew that, and that's
you know, yeah, I
really...
just assumed, but that was a good point. I would be willing to risk being stuck in there with you, Titanius.
He's like silent for like a while, processing
mm-hmm.
what he just said, and he just looks up to you, and you see one ghostly tear in his eye. Yeah, we could do it. Yeah.
Yeah, we could. We could definitely do it.
All right. And he goes to push dramatically away from the desk, and his hands just like slip through the whole thing.
Oh.
He's like, right, yeah, this is fine. And he stands up, fully stands into the desk and steps backwards. And he says, yeah, all right, let's go now.
Now. Okay. Now.
Yep.
You seem amped. Let's use this momentum, Titanius.
Yep.
Let's go.
Now is great.
Let's go.
And he holds out his hand, his ghostly hand, and he looks at it, and he starts, like, gritting his teeth, and his fingers start to kind of curl up in effort, and he just stares at his hand and stares and is starting now muttering several dwarven curse words. Eventually, you see... kind of from the start of his fingertips, just kind of dripping down as if liquid. Not that it becomes solid, but there is a little bit more, a little bit less. Is it opacity? Right?
Yes.
It's a little more solid, a little less see through. Yeah, exactly. And he is just like, you can see, he just has his like hand is like claw like, but he holds it out to you and he's like, take my hand. Take it.
I got it.
Do not let go.
I'm not letting go.
Oh, I mean, I don't know what will happen. So just, all right. We're not thinking about consequences. We're not thinking about getting stuck there again. We're not thinking about game shows. All right. Ready? 1, 2, 3. And he just like starts moving forward.
Val goes with him.
And now a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by A Foul Light Shines, a new free serial novel based on a D&D campaign. The Empire of Fire and Water has known 20 golden years of peace since the end of Aegenion's War, a peace which is now in peril. When a ragtag group of friends intervene in a grotesque monster attack, they're too late to save a wounded man who leaves them with an encrypted journal and the words... trust no one, Tyr. Can the gang find Tyr, escape the claws of more strange monsters, and uncover the lurking threat to the Empire before it's too late? This story features themes of found family and strength in diversity, and is available for free on Campfire and Royal Road. A Foul Light Shines. Come for the fantasy. Stay for the cheese-obsessed goblin gunslinger.
Hey everyone, Jonathan here with the midroll. If you're looking for the hottest frog memes around, join the Reckless Attack community on Discord. You can find a link to it in the show notes of our latest episodes or on our website, recklessattack.com. Want to support the show? Tell a friend or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/recklessattack, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback show as well as our new Reckless the Snack series, where we eat snacks, hang out, and just talk about whatever's on our mind. Thanks so much for listening to us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the episode.
Kaskarin.
Hi.
So, you've exhausted the meditation angle.
I have. In addition, Kaskarin has exhausted several other angles this morning, trying to figure out more about the Eternal Citadel.
Yes.
He's asked Berga. He's looked at the records in the map room. He's tried channeling his inner, I don't know, Val. Tried channeling his inner Val to figure out, like, can I think my way to the answer?
Mm-hmm.
And so far, it's been no.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also kind of picturing on his list is, like, blackout drunk with a you know, worth another shot.
Yeah.
Or like something like that. A little note scrawled next to it.
Well, about that, so. Kaskarin has decided that it's time for a little break.
And by Kaskrin, I mean me. It's David. And Kaskrin has found himself around like early afternoon, midday, down at the local watering hole. Ports and Ports.
Ooh, okay.
He is nursing a drink, a fine dwarven ale. But more importantly, he is waiting for someone. Someone that he wasn't actually sure would reach out, given such short notice. But after a few minutes, through the door, he sees this large, imposing figure walk in.
And you see what is a 7-foot-tall, well-muscled figure wearing dented plate mail. And you would immediately recognize him as Char from the Supernatural Victims Unit here in Agmar.
Yes, indeed. From the special Split the Party episode of Reckless Attack, way back when in the episodes Against the Mothman.
Yes. And Char immediately sees you sitting at the bar, Cass, and essentially stomps on over to you.
Cass, hey, buddy, as he claps you on the shoulder.
Char, it's been too long. It's been too long. It's so good to see you again.
Absolutely. I was so excited you decided to reach out. I mean, a midday drink is exactly where I want to be.
Come here. And Kaskrin calls the bartender over for another drink. So, Char, I did want to catch up, obviously. But I did have a few questions for you as well.
Sure. Shoot, Cass.
Well, have you or the SVU heard about anything weird lately?
That's pretty vague, Cass. But we did just finish up a case. We gotten reports of some weird animals outside the walls of Agmar. Big, weird, mutated things, actually. And they were stalking about, chasing people down. People were afraid to go outside. I think you were out of town at this point, so you probably didn't hear about it. But we traced the whole thing down to a wizard with a broken magical wand, actually. If you believe it. He was not going to give it up without a fight, let me tell you that. So Harrison and I got put on that one, and that was a doozy. But I don't think that's what you're talking about.
No, magical wands seem a little different. See? And Kaskrin kind of takes another drink of his ale. I've been searching for something. I've been searching for my patron. As you may know, I'm a warlock.
Mm-hmm.
And truth be told, I don't know who I'm indebted to. I don't know what they want. And so I've been trying to get in contact with, I know them as the Eternal Citadel. You see, years ago, when I first lived in Lotros, there was an attack. An Ultra Giant came into the city and very nearly destroyed it. The elders of the city were able to turn it back, but in the process, everyone nearly died. I nearly died. And it was only by a sheer act of desperation, of calling out for someone to help me, that I gained power. The power to protect myself. The power to stop myself from being consumed by the stones on my hands. Kaskrin takes another drink. Alright, this is getting too heavy. I mean, look, Char, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, have you guys heard, do you have any cases come across your desk about this castle, about the Citadel?
And Char, he kind of brushes off your attempt at redirection. Because when you were talking about your past, your history, he was sitting there listening, and he actually kind of maintains the mood a little bit. He's like, That sounds like a pretty tough time, Cass. But you're saying that you reached out to this citadel, this castle, for help, for survival. And now you're trying to find out more about them? All these decades later?
When you put it like that, it sounds a little silly.
No, I don't think it's silly. I think it's... If anything, you should have done it sooner.
Yeah. Those are crazy times, and... I was just... glad to be alive. I didn't even think about it. And... when things stabilized, when the city came back to... having walls, having defenses, being able to sustain itself, I was just happy to be there. And I... yeah, I never thought about it again until a few months ago.
Well, I don't know if I've ever heard of anything specifically called the Eternal Citadel, but... when you have cities as old as these, as Agmar, as Lotros... they tend to have a life of their own, in a way. Sometimes I feel like Agmar itself is alive, is watching us, is living, is breathing. And this city has stood for, I don't even know how many years, but a city like that, you could call it an eternal citadel, right? So...
Kaskrin looks into his ale and thinks about Char's words for a bit. And suddenly, some of the dots begin to connect in his head. Talking about things being old, things having a life of their own. He says, "You know, Char, I think you might have just given me a clue."
That'll be another drink.
Mugs clash. Cheers are made. I'm sure Mal's ward is drank. And Valeska Carter, you find yourself once more in the restricted section of the library. All around you, as far as the eye can see, and presumably even farther, is the horrible, plain, blank whiteness of Titanius's void. With the only notable exception being an old, perfectly preserved wooden desk in the middle of it all. You can feel Titanius's grip. Feels firmer, both in terms of he seems more corporeal here, but also he's squeezing a little bit tighter and is still taking some deep, heavy breaths despite his whole unneeded to breathe aspect that he has.
Yeah. And Val will just like model some slower rhythmic deep breathing, just like a and like just start taking her time, and then we'll wait for like Titanius to like match her breathing and then start being like, "Hey, checking in. What are you feeling right now?"
It's good and bad.
Understandable.
I'm sorry. Feelings are hard.
Absolutely.
Can we go to the desk?
Yes. We can do whatever you are up for.
Okay, don't let go of my hand.
Absolutely not.
We're going. And he's like takes these halting steps and goes over to his desk and places his one hand on its surface. Still here. The desk is still here. And he goes around and opens a drawer. It's a drawer. Still opens. Yep. Open that drawer a lot. Like a lot. Like a lot. He runs his hand over and he kind of like depresses a part of the desk. And up pops the Rolodex, which is still filled and kind of gives a flourish of a spin. We're back. Everything is fine. I can leave. And you're here.
I'm here.
And I'm here.
You're doing great.
Okay. both because I'm feeling okay, and so we don't get in trouble and maybe murdered, we should maybe talk to the big guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's clearly air.
And he turns back to the desk and he goes to his Rolodex and just like does a huge flip of it. And it's just, you hear just like, and he does it another time and another time. And he starts doing it and it picks up momentum and just like starts whirling and whirling and whirling. And wind starts getting kicked up into his ghostly beard until eventually one of the cards in it just pops up in front and just floats there in front of his face. I think this should work, and I think it will not be our end. So, hold on. And he, like, holds your hand tight.
Mm-hmm.
Then he lets out a super long, convoluted message that you recognize is Dewey Decimal Numbers. Very suddenly, before he has stopped, you hear a voice behind you say,
"You have summoned me."
Val, like, knows it's coming, but still just, like, freezes and, like, tenses up.
And in front of you, indeed, once again, is the bookworm. This spectral giant creature is huge. Its head is before you once more, and its long, thin, snake-like body just swirls all around behind it, and despite being sort of see-through, you can see its eyes particularly seem more real than certainly the rest of it, but just as real as anything that you've seen. As the two of you shuffle around, it says,
"Ah, it is the two of you.
Hello, sir. I'm Valeska, and this is Titanius."
Yes. Before we may conduct any further conversation, this is the restricted section, and therefore, I require to see your library cards.
Val, like, quick draws hers.
has it spring-loaded in her wrist. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And will hold it out like she's holding it to it, like your ID to a bouncer where, like, they can read it.
Yep, totally.
And he's very much in his ornate, I am a badass bookworm form, so I'm imagining he's not going to take out his, like, T-Rex hands to pick up her.
Put on his little readers.
Yes, exactly. And you see Titania's like, oh, yeah. And he actually fishes down into his, like, whatever shirt he's wearing and grabs out a spectral, very old library-like staff badge that you can see in Pentarchy Standard says, like, Titanius, librarian, etc., and has like a
clearance
very old
levels.
Yeah, exactly. Has a very old, like, 1970s style picture of Titanius from like 90 years ago.
Wait, did he have like long hair?
I was about to say he has like he has a very high collar, very disco chic.
Please tell me he has mutton chops.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Mutton chops. Yes. Absolutely, exactly. And it's like giving like a wink to the camera, but otherwise looks exactly like him. He's like, and shows it, does the same thing. And you can see these eyes that are boring into you dart down, really look at it, and really spend like, again, a bouncer amount of time looking at it, dear listener.
Like, bouncer
you know
amount of time,
I mean,
where like they clearly can see you're under 21. Like, yeah. Something, you're too young. To
something must be wrong here. I need to read this a fourth time to really be sure.
Very well. Welcome, patron. Last I saw the two of you, I let you leave. And here you are, back again. What is it that you wish?
Our first goal is to have a reintroduction of yourself and Titanius. Though he is able to now leave the restricted section, this was his home for decades and wanted to make sure he could come back and forth and not have any reservations about if that was acceptable.
Titanus just kind of raises his hand mm-hmm. and waves. Hi.
And I have a request that I think could help both of us. The restricted section holds vast volumes of knowledge that were thought to be lost forever to the outside world. I am trained by the illustrious Atheum that seeks to expand everyone's access to knowledge so that we can open doors and open minds. I wish to assist in opening the restricted section for patrons of the library. I wish to make it safe for those who come to you for permission to research, read, and explore what knowledge and truths lie within these rooms.
Interesting. A return to the public. Go on.
A couple hours later, Kaskrin has his little rucksack and he is outside of the city walls yet again. He has ventured a couple of hours out, and with him is, of course, his trusty traveling companion, Sylvester.
By the way.
Yeah, hi. And I'm imagining this far out into the nearby forests of Agmar. Kaskrin and Self have found a little bit of a clearing, and Kaskrin is muttering to himself, I think it's around here. Maybe in that direction? No. Self, do you remember where we planted the dryad clipping we were entrusted with?
Yes, it was around here somewhere.
And then Self takes kind of a look around, orients himself, and then points in a direction a little bit deeper into the clearing.
That way.
Can you both make me two d20 rolls, please?
Kaskrin has a 12 and a 6.
Selv has a 15 and a 17.
Ooh. God, these cicadas are brutal. Yeah.
You've done this to yourself.
Outside of the city.
Yeah, oh man.
Because, you know, the other times, the cicadas are active for exactly 2 weeks every 90 years.
Right, yeah.
And it is one of those times, and you're like, ah, can't be that bad. Woof. It is really bad. Kaskrin, you're really starting, like, it's not horrific, but like, it's starting to get to you. Selv to a little bit less extent, but it's still very unpleasant. And you can tell, like, am I getting a migraine? Yeah.
I don't understand how they can scream that much.
Kaskrin has his hands to his ears, like, Selv, do you know where we are?
I know where I am.
Selv, you are still kind of wandering forward. And again, this has been happening the whole time. The farther you've gotten from the city, the worse that it's gotten. And the longer you've been exposed to it, the more kind of maddening it has become. But you are still like, okay, no, I'm in control enough. I remember it was pretty much, you know, kind of in this general area.
And Kaskrin has been searching for the dryad, like I said, the dryad clipping that we planted some weeks ago when we returned to the city. And he is really hoping that this dryad knows something. Because the dryad that they talked to in the field knew about the Eternal Citadel. The dryad that was next to the Luck Tree when he was first voluntold to go into the forest knew about the Eternal Citadel.
That's right. Episode 1 and 2 callback, baby!
And so he's really hoping that maybe there's clues here as well.
Kaskrin, you fall on your face. You are walking. You are trying desperately. Like, where did Selv go? I'm covering up my ears. Oh, this is rough. Oh, God. Oh, God. What does this mean? Am I ever going to find it? All of the thud.
Yeah.
And you are face first in the dirt, in the grass, surrounded by all these trees, right next to like just a face full of mulch. But something reached out and tripped you.
Oh, God. What's happening? Selv, are we under attack?
Selv, right in front of you. And by extension, Kaskrin, is what appears to be a little girl. She's a couple feet tall, probably 6 to 8, maybe, in mortal human-ish years. Again, human is not quite correct. It seems maybe elf, maybe human, maybe something else. But this creature is standing in front of you, and it appears to mostly be made out of grass. Its features are very soft and not fully formed yet, or at least not very stark. But you can tell, unlike the dryad that you met previously, who was just entirely kind of grass and stuff, this one is much more of a mishmash of things. And so patches on its skin, seemingly randomly, instead are made out of bark. And its hair is a, you know, kind of a different, like, mossy substance that kind of cascades down its back, and there are just flowers springing all over its body, and its eyes are two shiny pebbles that look out at you, and through the horrific din
I was gonna say, I'm imagining that they are petting a couple of cicadas. Yeah.
Through the horrific din, you hear a very tiny voice yell something. Just, and you see it kind of like mouth flap a little bit and like looks back at Selv and mouth flap something. And then you see she turns around and she stamps her foot like a child throwing a tantrum. And you can actually hear just barely over the din, "Hey guys, come on, be
come
quiet.
On, be quiet.
It is as if someone just, like, turned the volume down on all the cicadas near you. This little kid yells out, "Thank you!
Thank you!"
and turns around and faces you two. She just looks up at both of you and is like, "Hi! Who are you?"
"I'm Kaskrin, and this is my friend Selv. We've been looking for you."
She looks at your hand, looks up at you, looks down at your hand again, and gives it a little kiss. "For me? Why?"
"Yeah, I was actually kind of hoping if you could help me out and maybe tell me a few stories, if there's things that you..."
"Wait a second. I remember you two. You brought me here, right?"
"That is accurate, yes."
"Hedge uncles. Hi, hedge uncles. Are you here to play?"
Maybe a little bit later, but I was hoping maybe I could ask you a few questions first. Nothing too hard, I'm sure."
"Talking's good too, sure."
"Well, first off, do you have a name?"
"No." "Oh, man. I've been spending so much time learning everyone else's names. I mean, there's like all these bugs now, and that tree over there, I keep forgetting it, and bunnies. God, there's so many bunnies, and there just keeps being more bunnies all the time. It's really stressful. But I don't have one for myself."
"Is there one you particularly like?"
"Selv Astralin."
"Oh, that is an excellent..."
"No, that's yours."
"Also true, but still an excellent name."
"Why don't we just call you Little One for now?"
"Okay. And she like strokes her chin a little bit and like is not paying attention. "All right, for now, yes. For later, maybe no."
"Maybe then you can be just one, and then you can be Big One."
"Big One."
again, you recognize us, which is good.
Hedge uncles.
Yes, your hedge uncles. And your hedge uncles were really wondering if you could, if you knew anything about something called the Eternal Citadel.
No. Oh, so I know a lot about stuff, and you know some things. Do you know about gods?
Yes, I do. I know about the gods. I know about the saints.
Well, so it's like, okay. So me, right? So I'm a clipping from the dryad that you met. Yeah? Right. And you planted me, my hedge uncles, and you planted me here, right? So the other dryad, she is like the gods, and then she gave you something, and then you took the thing, me, and you came here, and you planted me, and you became hedge uncles who are gonna visit a lot and play with me.
As she is talking, Kaskrin feels this cold sensation in the back of his neck as realization dawns on him. In the same way the dryad created a part of herself to give to us to sow, the saints created part of themselves and gifted them to mortals, to us. His powers come from the saints, which means they're still around somehow. Memories begin to flood his mind. Not his memories, but memories of a saint long forgotten. He sees an artist. He sees a sculptor with her greatest work, a magnificent landscape carved from marble. He feels glimpses of her pride, her dedication, her stubbornness to shape the stone to perfection. As the cold creeps into the back of his mind, he whispers a name. Saint Magnolia, the sculptor.
So, as this is happening, you actually see something that you've seen before happen. It brings you back to another time that you're outside the walls of Agmar. And it brings you back specifically to the moment that you guys decided to turn around and go back for the member of the bones that had been left behind. Knowing you were weak, knowing that it wasn't the smart idea, but maybe it was the good choice. Because Kaskrin starts to glow. And it becomes unbelievably bright, but somehow not blinding. He starts glowing, and it gets to the point where a column of light flashes up into the air from him. This energy kind of infuses him and is coursing through him and then is just shot into the air, almost like a flare. And you feel all of this. And it is, as you said, David, where something is different. Something you is like there is a new power, a new glow, a new connection inside of you as all of this realization happens.
And Kaskrin feels much more solid than he has in a long time. When the glow subsides, he looks at himself. He looks at his hands, at his feet, and he notices how much more the rocks feel a part of his body. You know, even more than they used to. He concentrates, and the rocks begin to flow up his arm as if they are consuming him once again.
Whoa.
And then they flow back. And then they ebb up to his shoulder, forming this kind of protective pauldron. And back again. And he says, yeah. Whoa.
Glowy hedge uncle.
Are you, feeling okay there, Cass?
I think I'm feeling better than I have in a long time.
Good. Because I think we may owe our shrub niece.
Yes.
Shrub niece. A hedge niece.
A debt. To be repaid.
In blood.
In blood.
I was
your
thinking.
Your bones are mine.
I was thinking more.
Self, Jesus.
I honestly was like, that would definitely be something Delilah would say to me. And I'd just be like, year four. Okay.
Valeska, you are in the restricted section. You have been talking for a bit. A lot of discussion. A lot of clarifying questions.
It's a good back and forth.
It's a good back and forth. It is terse but respectful, mm-hmm. You know, looking for facts. The worm turns to you after this lengthy discussion. You've been here for a while and it's kind of settled in. Titanius is settled in. And the worm turns to you and says,
so, you wish to enter this place, to prepare it, to prepare others for a resumption of service.
Yes.
This section has not seen visitors aside from yourself in many, many years.
It will take some work, but I'm willing to do it.
The knowledge here must be protected. It must be guarded.
Agreed.
But I do not wish to see it hidden away any longer. To do this, you will need more than you already have.
I do have the highest level of library card that I have been told exists.
Yes, but to enter this place, you must become a part of it. You must have its power.
Val's eyes go wide.
You must carry an additional burden. You must carry a staff library card. Are you prepared to serve the library?
I am, yes.
You must swear it.
Val. Mm-hmm. Something appears before you in this moment. What is Val's favorite book of all time? What is the most meaningful book to Val?
The one that would pop into her mind first would be the Rixian version of A Wrinkle in Time.
Mm-hmm.
As that was a book that is one of the first ones she could start reading on her own, with a little bit of help. And it was the first book that sparked the idea of the greater world out there and the friends she could explore with.
In front of you is a copy of that book. Unbidden. It's not necessarily first edition because it is Val's edition. When you look at it, it is not just this book.
Mm-hmm.
Something about it, when you look at it, you know it is yours.
There's a corner of the cover ripped off from when she and Caden Jr. were fighting over it.
Right, exactly. It is all, everything is book, is earmarked in the way that you earmarked it when you were eight or whatever.
Never. There's bookmarks for a reason, sir.
It has your eight-year-old bookmark in it or whatever the equivalent is. But exactly. And even if there wasn't those physical tells, something about it, you just no. And it floats in front of you as if it is resting on an invisible desk.
Val reaches out for it and holds it in her hand.
The booming voice, now a little gentler than it had been, reverberates around this void and asks simply,
"Do you serve the library and the public through knowledge?"
Val looks at the bookworm with her hand on her favorite book and says, "I swear to be patron and servant."
Instinctually, you grab the book. You don't even think about it. You just, you know, you just take it as if you're taking it off of a desk or a dresser. And you hold it in your hand. And again, it is real. It is there. And something about it, when you grab it, you feel different. It is not the big surge of power. It is not any sort of dramatic display, but something about you is changed. And you feel more real as well in this place. Something about it where previously you didn't ever feel super good in here, anywhere in the restricted section for a lot of reasons. But this feels like a good, safe place for you to be in. And you look over to the hand that has been held for the last 45 minutes or whatever by Titanius, and he looks down at his hand and look up at you, over at the worm, back down, and he lets go of your hand.
Val has like a moment of shock, but then continues to feel that safety here, and she brings the book to her chest and kind of grips it on either side, almost giving it a hug, and kind of settles into that feeling. Looks at Titanius, looks at the worm, and gives each of them a nod.
"Be here first thing Monday for orientation."
"Yes, sir."
And then the day proceeds. Kaskrin, Val, Selv, Checkers sort of,
yeah,
eventually turns back up at the guild hall, feeling different, feeling renewed, feeling tired, feeling like he has served his community well today. You guys pair your own characters to whoever that might be referring to. And the next day rolls around, and maybe even the next, and things feel different. Eventually, Selv leaves. He is called away for a few days.
He's taking some PTO.
So taking some PTO in an event that we will cover on a future episode of Reckless Attack. And has been gone for a little while, but again, life has really continued in a very steady way here in the Red City of Agmar. You're still able to pursue things. There's no really big kind of threats or anything, and things are pretty slow, all in all. One day, Berga is out running some errands. Selv has been gone for a little while. Checkers is off doing community service, but Kaskrin and Val both find themselves still in the guild hall, and you hear a knock on the door.
"Don't worry, masters, I shall fetch the door."
"Oh, no, drop, no, we gotta," and like, I imagine Val and Kaskrin are both just like doing that,
like, for it.
Like that weird, like, jog you do in your house where it's not like a full run.
But like a scoot.
Yeah, scoot. No, we got it, drop.
And standing in front of you guys is Jack Brill, the hedgehog guard, who is some amount of man-sized and some amount of hedgehog-sized. "Hey, guys."
"Hey, Jack.
Good afternoon. You two here. Is Checkers here?"
"Well, Checkers is supposed to be with you, and Selv is What
got- you see in the background? Selv approaching the guild hall in this moment. So very, very briefly, what is it that you look like after being gone for like a week at least?
Even from him walking from a distance, you can see that he is just tired.
Mm-hmm.
As he gets closer, you could see that he is maybe limping a little bit. His clothes are kind of covered in dirt and dust and all of that. But he also is sporting a couple of new bruises.
Jack turns around. Oh, Self, yeah. Oh, good. Thank goodness you're here. Yeah. So, Checker's not here.
Correct. He
okay.
Is.
We haven't seen him for a while. Yeah.
Ah, oh, good. It'll be quiet. I need to sleep, I think.
We did book you the spa.
So about that. Checkers is missing with some children that he was in charge of. And also, the waveless lake has waves now. Can you help?
I'm sorry, what?
What now?
And that is where we will pick up next week on Reckless Attack. Bye!
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 Val's entire character revolving around libraries is my favorite thing.
You have a thing and you stick with it.
Yeah.
Is every librarian a warlock? You,
only the best ones.
Andromeda, you have some secrets?
Elder's West. She can fire 8 at once.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn.
Gee, that's like 25th level.
I know, yeah.